Seeing the crowds, Jesus went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. He opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Well, let's start with a game, because that'll get everyone awake. Okay, free cup of coffee. I'm going to give you words of a song. And if you can guess what the song is, you get a free cup of coffee. Actually, if you can guess who the singer is, you'll get a cookie as well. Free. So here the words are. Terracotta homes, backyard barbecue, and eucalyptus smell. It's fine on the clothesline. It's fast food and slow life and red roof. Lucky country, where the geckos are paid to live in the sun. On and on, there's a ribbon of road and a mile to spare. Lucky country, lucky country. Okay, you can show off to your neighbor quickly. Tell them you know who it is and who sang it. Quickly. Who is it? It's Midnight Oil. Of course it is. That's right. And the lead singer is Peter Garrett. Rock star, failed politician, and amazing hairstyle. That's Peter Garrett. Let me read you the words again. Lucky country, where the geckos are paid to live in the sun. On and on, there's a ribbon of road and a mile to spare. Lucky country, lucky country. Australia is the lucky country. Immigrants all over the world, people everywhere are trying to get into Australia. I'm one of them. This is the lucky country. Did you know? My front yard has got no wall. Did you know that? I've got grass and there's a public road. Anyone can come into my, there's no wall. Did you know that my main bedroom is on my front garden? Even more amazing, I sleep next to a window with no burglar guards at all. Anyone who really wants to can get into my room. Ask the mosquitoes, they'll tell you. Easy access. Did you know, and I'm going to talk honestly to Australians here this morning. Did you know that the vast majority of the world does not live like that? You've got used to it. Where I come from, there are iron bars, yay thick, on the windows. There are iron bars on every window. Where I come from, there's a palisade fence outside with rolls of barbed wire on top of it. Where I come from, a guard with a shotgun and a bulletproof vest patrols all night long while you sleep. I remember my first night. First night in Australia, 2008. Never been here before. This guy was showing me around Australia. We went to the south shore of Perth to see the lights. And I saw these boxes on the south shore. Perhaps you know where I am, next to the where they keep all those Hobie Cat yacht things. And I looked at this box. It's this box. On this. And I said, "Mate, that's..." I didn't say mate yet because I wasn't acclimatized. But anyway, and I said to him, "Mate, that's a barbecue. He said, yeah. Whose is it? No, mate, that just stays there. Look, and he's coming in. And he switched it on. He didn't put money in. It just, I was gobsmacked. That would last, where I come from, that would be there for 5 minutes. And it'd be gone. It's free. It's free. Couldn't believe it. Australia is the lucky country. Everyone wants to live in Australia. We are so blessed to live in this country. We are the envy of so many people. Lucky, lucky us. Did you know there's a better place to live? Did you know that? There's a better place. It's not Bali. What happens if I told you there is a place where there is not only no crime, and let's be honest, Australia does have crime, and Australia is not heaven. We know this, and it's not perfect. I know a place where it is so good, not just because of the absence of things like crime and poverty and things like that. It's good because of the positive presence of things. Things like love, joy, peace. This place I'm talking about corresponds exactly to the deepest longings of every human heart. I know you because you're a human and so am I. Your deepest longings correspond to this place that I'm talking about. How lucky, how blessed are the people who live in that place. Dwayne, where's this place? I want to go there. I want my children to go there. I want to be there with my family. I'm talking about the kingdom of heaven. The Sermon on the Mount is all about life in the kingdom of heaven. It's amazing. As we're going to go through it, you judge for yourselves whether you want to immigrate and live there. It's so good. Look at how Jesus starts this sermon. Look with me. I know you know this, but just look. Verse 3, blessed are the... Verse 4, blessed. Verse 5, blessed. Verse 6, blessed. 9 times over, Jesus says, oh, blessed. It's like a travel brochure. Now, what does that word blessed mean? I have to interrupt myself right here and tell you 2 things. One, there will be questions and answers, because I forgot to say that. So please text in your questions. There's a number on this outline. The second thing is, today I am going to take a bit of time to introduce the Sermon on the Mount to you, because it's our first talk in the Sermon on the Mount. So there you go. Forgot to say both of those things. What does the word blessed mean? What is that word, blessed? What does it mean? Actually, there's no real English equivalent. The word blessed is very good, but we don't actually have the perfect English word that encapsulates the word makarios, which is what it is. Lucky is a good word. Lucky is good, but it's got too many bad connotations. So we don't want to use the word lucky, but it's actually quite helpful. Blessed is the state of somebody who's in a very good position. Blessed is the state of someone in a very good position. It's not necessarily subjective. Blessed does not mean your feelings. Hopefully your feelings will catch up, but blessed is objective, not subjective. It's a state that you're in. You're in a good place. It's an objective state. You know, the Australian phrase, good on you, mate, is actually very helpful. That's another way of saying blessed. Hey, good on you, mate. You've got it good. Your bottom is in the butter. You're in a good place. You're someone who's really got it good. You are someone who's scored, mate. Actually, if there are any British people here, this is what the Poms would say. Sorted, mate. Sorted. That's what blessed means. Sorted. It's landed good for you. And that's why this is enough, I hope, to make you want to listen to the sermon. I hope you came this morning going like this. You know what? I've got it good, but I want it better. Well, then this sermon's perfectly for you. I don't know how good you've got it, but I think it's going to be worth listening to Jesus because he's going to tell you what it's like to be blessed. Talking about Jesus, my favorite subject, let me introduce you to the speaker. Who's the speaker? Who's the preacher? His name is Jesus. Does it matter, actually? Who cares who said this? Who cares? Is it important? Mahatma Gandhi read the Sermon on the Mount many times. He said, I love it. He said, this is my religion. That's what Gandhi said about the Sermon on the Mount. This is my religion. Actually, the Dalai Lama said, this is Buddhism. The Sermon on the Mount is Buddhism. That's what he said. There are many who believe, and I got this from Gandhi devotees themselves, that the doctrine of Satyagraha, which, if, however you pronounce that, actually stems from the Sermon on the Mount. That's where Gandhi learned it from. But Gandhi says that it doesn't matter who preached this. He's not that interested in Jesus. He likes the Sermon on the Mount. Listen to what he said. I have never been interested in an historical Jesus. I should not care if it were proved by someone that the man Jesus never lived, and that what was narrated in the Gospels was a figment of the writer's imagination. For the Sermon on the Mount would still be true for me. Is he right? Can you have the sermon without the preacher? Can you? This is the first and most common mistake people make about the Sermon on the Mount. Hear me carefully. The Sermon on the Mount is not for everybody. The Sermon on the Mount is not a moral code for everyone to live by. It's not rules for how we can play nicely in Perth together. It's not how to be good. It's not for everybody. The Sermon on the Mount is for followers of Jesus. It's for them. Look at verse 1 and 2. Seeing the crowds, Jesus went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. He opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, blessed are, etc. The Sermon on the Mount is for disciples of Jesus. Now, I have no doubt in my mind the crowds were listening. They were overhearing what Jesus says. And don't get me wrong, Perth would be awesome if everyone followed the Sermon on the Mount. Don't get me wrong, fantastic. But number one, no one can do this. The Sermon on the Mount is impossible. Have you ever read it? It's impossible. I feel like I want to say to all of you at the start of the Sermon on the Mount, don't try this at home. This is too hard. In fact, Gandhi said, I have never met anyone in my life who kept the Sermon on the Mount. It's only when you have a relationship with the preacher. It's only when you have a deep relationship with the speaker, Jesus, that he empowers you by his Holy Spirit to follow the Sermon on the Mount. Without that, this is more than higher grade. This is just impossible. The second reason why it's not for everyone is because that you might be misled into thinking you can earn your salvation by keeping the Sermon on the Mount, which is what Gandhi thought. And that's a disaster. If I do what the Sermon on the Mount says, I'll get in to the kingdom of heaven, right? Wrong. The Sermon on the Mount is given to people who are already in the kingdom of heaven. It's so important we get this. Jesus calls his disciples to himself, And then he says, this is what my saved people look like. This is the way they live. The Sermon on the Mount is not how to be saved. The Sermon on the Mount is how to live when you're already saved. There's not a lot of rules in my house, because don't judge me by my hair, but we're a bunch of hippies, really. So there's not a lot of rules in my house. One rule is keep the fly screen closed. It's not hard, people. Keep the fly screen closed. And every member of my family knows, keep the fly screen closed. And so I'll be sitting in the study in my front lounge area. I'll be studying something, and I'll hear the fly screen open, and it'll go, and some poor family member has opened it, and I can't resist. One, two, three. If I don't hear that next, close the fly screen, and then in the distance I hear, sorry. Now imagine if you wanted to be part of my family. Well, I don't know why, but let's say you want to be adopted into my family. So you go home to your house, and you close your fly screen. And you just keep banging your fly screen perfectly. I would want to say to you, good on you, mate. That makes me very happy. Well done. You still can't live in my family. Just because you keep the rules doesn't mean you get to be adopted. It's the same with God. The Sermon on the Mount does not make you a child of God. The Sermon on the Mount is for those who are already children of God and adopted by Him and in the family, so keep the fly screen closed. This is a family code of conduct. That's what you're looking at. If you want to be in the family, you're going to have to know the speaker. You're going to have to be close to the preacher, because he can let you in. All right, so let's look at the speaker. Who's the preacher? Who is this Jesus? Who is he? Well, here's where we need to look at the context. And I'm going to take you to just a few verses in Matthew 4 before the Sermon on the Mount. Watch what happens. So here's Jesus. He's in the north of Israel, in the north. Okay. So he went throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every disease, every affliction among the people. His fame spread throughout all Syria. They brought him all the sick, those who are afflicted with various diseases and pains, those oppressed by demons, those who are having seizures, paralytics. He healed them. It's going nuts. Signs and wonders everywhere. It's crazy. Then, here's what happens. And great crowds followed him from Galilee and the Decapolis, that's the 10 cities, and from down south, from Jerusalem and Judea, and from beyond the Jordan, that's where the early tribes settled when they conquered the land. Let me just put this to you in English. This is unified Israel. The northern tribes are gathering to Jesus. The two southern tribes are gathering to Jesus. And the tribes from the other side of the Jordan are gathering to Jesus. Dwayne, you're making a big deal. It is a big deal. Here is the reunited Israel gathered around Jesus. And look at verse 1 in your passage. And what does Jesus do? He goes up onto a mountain. He sits down in Bible talk. That's authority. He sits down. Look at you all sitting and me standing. In those days, it was the other way around. When you sat down, you took a position of teaching authority and everyone stood up. He sat down. His disciples came to him. Now everybody, take a wide angle lens. Think. What's going on? Think. Wide angle lens. Here are signs and wonders going nuts. Israel gathered together at a mountain, 12 disciples encircling him. Jesus sitting on a mountain, speaking the law. What does it make you think of? Yeah? Mount Sinai. That's what's going on. Long ago, God descended on top of Mount Sinai. There were signs and wonders. Israel, the 12 tribes were gathered around him. God gave his law, the 10 commandments. And he wrote them with his finger on tablets of stone. I want you all to know, this surpasses that. This transcends that. Here is God on another mountain, and he's not writing with a finger of, he's got 10 fingers. He's got 10 toes. He's got arms and legs. Here is God in the flesh on another mountain, gathering his people around him and giving them his law. And he's not writing on tablets of stone. Imagine when Jesus finished, everyone turns to each other. Did you get that down? Did you write that? Has anyone got a tablet of stone here? It's not on tablets of stone. Where's Jesus writing it? Well, the Bible tells us. Look at this verse here. You show that you are a letter from Christ delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone like in the old days, but on tablets of human hearts. Which one do you think is more glorious? Many Christians think the sermon on the Ten Commandments, oh my goodness, that is woohoo. Do you think so? Do you think that's the most glorious thing? This far surpasses that. Look what the Bible says. See, this is my thing, Stuart. It often jumps forward too when I do this. Now, if the ministry of death, oh my goodness, did you just see what he called the Ten Commandments? Somebody will have to text me and ask me why he calls it that. If the ministry of death, carved in letters on stone, came with such glory that the Israelites could not gaze at Moses' face because of its glory, which was being brought to an end, that thing was being brought to an end, will not the ministry of the Spirit have even more glory? The Sermon on the Mount far surpasses the giving of the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament. So let me ask you this question. Who's the speaker? Who's the speaker? He is the God of the Old Testament. Come in flesh. He's giving the terms of the new covenant to his people. It far exceeds the Ten Commandments. It far exceeds the Old Covenant. Does it matter who the speaker is? Oh my goodness. It makes all the difference in the world. Gandhi was wrong. This is what the living God requires of those who are his people. So in the light of that, let's go back to our word, blessed. What does blessed mean? I'm going to give it to you. Write this down. Oh, the happiness of those who are in a covenant relationship with God. That's what blessed means. Let me say it again. What does blessed mean? Oh, the happiness of those who are in a covenant relationship with God. Can you see it's not for outsiders? I often look at my wife, Naomi, and I think, oh, wow, wow. I wish I was married to her. And then I think to myself, oh, my goodness, I am. I thought it was a dream. Gee, I'm in such a good place. Oh, the blessedness of me. Even better are those in a covenant relationship with God. That's why I picked marriage, because marriage is a covenant relationship. What's it like to be married to Naomi? I'll tell you sometime when you've got a couple of weeks. What's it like to be in a covenant relationship with God? Well, just Read the Sermon on the Mount. That's what it's like. That's what we're going to do. And I'm realizing I'm not getting very far, am I? Well, let's look at the first one. Here it comes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You lucky people. Good on you, mate. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. By the way, if you look at the blesseds, there are eight of them. I know there's another, but the eight Beatitudes really are the main ones. The others are four. We'll get to that. The four first ones is life on the inside. You'll see this as we go along. The second four is life on the outside, how you relate to other people. First four, what's going on inside here. Second four, what's going on outside there. Let's jump into the first one. Blessed are the poor in spirit. What's that? What does it mean, Jesus, when you say, blessed are the poor in spirit? What do you mean? First of all, it does not mean materialism. Do not think in terms of money. Just because you're poor does not mean you're poor in spirit. I know lots of poor people who are proud and haughty and demanding. And I also know lots of rich folk who are poor in spirit, humble. So it's got nothing to do with your possessions, nothing at all. What does the word poor mean? What does poor mean? It's a dog's foot. But I'm trying to say it like Australians. What does poor mean? It means you're dependent on charity. That's what poor means. I'm dependent on charity. When you poor, you beg. You ask. You don't demand. You need grace and charity. Will you feel sorry for me? That's what poor means. And that is our attitude to our Father. We depend on grace and charity. We don't demand. We're poor. Look at this. It's actually a term that's used regularly in the Bible. Here's David. All of you need to know. I don't know why you need to know this, but that's my favorite verse in the whole Bible. Everyone who knows me knows this. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles. Who's saying that? A very rich man. That's David. He's a king. He's rich and powerful and wealthy. And he says, this poor man cried. That's poverty of spirit. Have a look at the next verse. One of the ways you can tell, Dwayne, how do I know that I'm poor in spirit? Well, your attitude to the Bible will show you. Look at what this God says in Isaiah 66. But this is the one to whom I will look, says God. He who is humble and in the word Hebrew, it's the same word, contrite, poor in spirit, and trembles at my word. Do you sit in judgment on the Bible? Do you look at the Bible and say, I don't like this part? You know the flood? That's not true. If you do that, you are not poor in spirit. You are proud in spirit. You think you can sit in judgment on God's word. The poor in spirit tremble at God's word. As we saw at Essentials, it is written. Do you tremble at that, or do you sit in judgment on it? Here is a great verse. Actually, I shouldn't say that, because all the verses in the Bible are great. Stuart, this isn't working because it does jump forward too. Just did it again. We're trying to see if this will work. Did it again. Right, Stuart, I'm going to hand over to you. You run it. Great. And I'm going to put this over here, although it has got a laser gun, so that's so fun. My dog loves that. And so do my children, mind you. No, that's not true. Okay, let's come back. Psalm 86, verse 1. Incline your ear, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my life, for I'm godly. Save your servant, slave, who trusts in you. There is poverty of spirit from a very rich, powerful, conquering king, David. There's a song, thanks to it, there's a song about being poor in spirit. I think you'll recognize it. Listen to these words. Nothing in my hand I bring. Simply to thy cross I cling. Naked, come to thee for rest. Helpless, look to thee for rest. That's poor in spirit. Martin Luther, when he died, said these words, "We are all beggars, and this is true." That's poor in spirit. Constantly looking to God for charity, for grace. It's about being empty before God so that He can fill you. Parents, mummies and daddies, does it ever worry you when your children are hungry? Not at all. Mom, I'm starving. Awesome. Yeah, have another packet of crisps. No, real food. But when little Johnny says, "I'm not hungry," you panic. Oh, what's wrong with you? You want to feel his forehead. It's the same with our Father. When we're starving, we're healthy. People in Perth are not starving. They're not poor in spirit. They're stuffed with money, with pleasures, with luxuries, with the particular evil of entertainment, gaming. And they think, "I'm so blessed." You're not. I don't see the need of God in my life. What value can Jesus add to my life? Or they find fault with God. "God, there's so much suffering in the world. I don't know if I can believe in you." Proud. But Christians say, "Oh God, I'm so needy. I need you. I'm poor. All this stuff doesn't fill my spirit. Please, Father, I'm poor. Fill me with you." People, this is why God lets Christians suffer. Take it on board. How on earth are you going to get poverty of spirit without suffering? How will you get it? Anyone who has really, really suffered and knows what it's like to cry out to God in agony in the middle of the night, when you're at your wit's end, take heart. God is emptying you so that you may have poverty of spirit. And Jesus says, "On your mate, you're in a great place." "No, I'm in a terrible place. I'm suffering." Jesus says, "Blessed are you. You're in a great place." Jesus says, people with that attitude are the winners. We have to turn our world upside down when we come to the Bible, because we're infected by the world we live in. Picture the Academy Awards. I've never watched the Academy Awards, ever. Picture it. There's the red carpet. Can you see it? There's the red carpet. And the paparazzi are there. It's just flashing cameras. All I can see is red lipstick. And flashing cameras. And the limousines are riding up. The fake smiles and the Gucci clothes. And the starstruck fans screaming and frothing. And mega rich and famous and multimillionaires all congratulating each other while their sexual deviancy is hidden behind the cameras. And then the host steps up. And they're all patting each other on the back. And he takes a little envelope and he opens it up and he says, "And the winner is," and it's another plastic faker. And the whole world erupts and there's joy. These are the winners in life. How different is Jesus. How utterly unlike what we think. If you take on what Jesus says, those are the losers. No, no. Let's go to the Academy Awards. Pretend Jesus is the host. Jesus stands up there. Everyone's watching him. Takes up an envelope. He opens it up. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jesus. And the winner is the little lady with the painful back who toddles her way to church, sits uncomfortably, opens her Bible, and wants to hear more about Jesus. Does she look like a winner to you? Jesus talked, another envelope. And the winner is, says Jesus, the teenager who reads her Bible in the morning, tries to memorize just one verse. She goes to school. She won't talk the way her friends talk. So it's a little bit awkward. They all think she's weird. Jesus says, you're the winner. Jesus takes out another envelope. And the winner is the guy at work. When the porn picture gets sent around the office and he's like, guys, I'm not interested in that. And they think, you gay? No, I'm not interested in that. My God is better than that. Huh? Loser. No, says Jesus, winner. The Academy Awards illustration is not that far-fetched. There is a day coming when awards will be handed out. There is a day coming when the whole world will be gathered before Jesus. On that day, Gandhi will see just how important the speaker was. And on that day, every single human being will be judged by Jesus. And he, like a shepherd, will separate goats from sheep. And on that day, the whole world will see for themselves who are the poor in spirit. And on that day, they will say, oh, good on you, mate. And when your name gets called up from your circle of unbelieving friends, they are all going to look at you and they're going to go, oh, you are so blessed. Blessed are the poor in spirit. What do they get? What's the prize? Look what it says. What do you get? What's the prize? A little golden naked thing. No, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Are you kidding me? Why doesn't it say the kingdom of Zimbabwe? That's a nice prize. What about the kingdom of America? Whoa, that's a huge prize. I mean, that must be awesome. Imagine surfing and skiing in the snow on the same day. What a country. Even better, yours is the kingdom of Australia. All this? Mine? You can have the lucky country. No, it's too small. Get some ambition. Yours is the kingdom of heaven. Can you believe it? The kingdom of heaven is shorthand for everything God has promised those who love him. It's the world as it should be. It's the world as it will be. It's the new world, the new heavens and new earth. I got a description for you. I got this from a travel brochure. No, I didn't. I got it from Revelation 21. But let me read it to you. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. The sea was no more. I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. So it's not the one on earth. Coming down from heaven. From God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them. They will be his people. God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Neither there shall be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things are passed away. Not bad, eh? Not bad, eh? Do you think that's better than Australia? The prize is literally out of this world. It's a prize no one can take from you. It's a prize that will last forever. It's a prize that will make your soul rich. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Would you like to see what poor in spirit looks like? Look at Jesus on the cross. Look at him. Have a look. He hangs there with nothing. 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 You want to talk about poor in spirit? He doesn't even answer back when they accuse him of things. He's got nails through his hands and feet. People are pouring shame, scorn, mocking. His reputation is shot to flames. They think God has cursed him. They think he's a liar. How does Jesus respond? Right, God. So this is what I get for always obeying you. Is that how Jesus responds? No. Even on the cross, Jesus starves. Not for escape. Not for deliverance. Oh, God, get me out of this. God, get me out. No, no. He longs for God. My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's poor in spirit. He longs for God, not my God, smite them. My God, where's my health, wealth, and prosperity? My God, I deserve better than this. No, my God, it's you I want. Poverty of spirit. Why did Jesus put himself in that position then? He did it for you. He did it for you. He became poor so that you, through his poverty, can become rich. Everyone look at that. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the... Are you saying I've earned heaven by being poor in spirit? No. Jesus earned heaven for you. That's why he died on the cross. The only reason he offers you the kingdom of heaven when you're poor in spirit is because he earned it for you. Let me ask you this morning. Are you spiritually poor? Did you come here this morning poor, destitute? Are you spiritually needy? And I've got one thing to say to you. Good on you, mate. You're in such a good place. Blessed are you. Or did you come here this morning satisfied? I don't need God. I came to check out if this is all true. I'm busy judging the Bible to see whether I decide whether I think it's true or not. Actually, I'm going to become a Christian. I'm going to do God a favor. I don't need church. Do you know that I come to church 2 out of 4? I think that's fair enough. I'm not that needy. I don't need church. I reckon 2 out of 4 a month, that's all I need because I'm not that hungry. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven.